From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. More Idaho Matters right now. It's that time of year again, Oscar time. We've got some predictions about who might go home with a golden statuette this year. Plus, we'll listen back to some of Oscar's more unusual hosts. We'll have some great speeches as well and, you know, some hilarious moments from past Oscars. So here to help us figure out what to watch on Oscar night is our resident movie critic and Morning Edition host, George Prentice. Hi, George.
Hi, Gemma. I've got to get my tux out of the closet. You know, I think we should all dress up for this one.
I think we should, too. I mean, it's such a fancy night, right? Okay, so let's start with some predictions. Who is going to win on Oscar night?
Well, what's interesting this year is that people have actually seen a few of these movies this year.
That's a concept, huh?
Barbie and Oppenheimer, of course, owned the box office for the better part of a half a year. And I think it's also fair to say that Oppenheimer is the odds-on favorite to take home Best Picture and Best Director. And I think a lot of people would not disagree with that this year. And that's maybe one of the bigger differences of why I think a lot of people are going to watch this year. And there is reason to be optimistic that the show would be pretty good. When you look at the talent and the best song nominees, and they're all going to be there to perform, I think that's pretty exciting. If you look at award season, and Gemma, you and I have been talking about award season now for what seems to be a few months, there are definite trends. And Oppenheimer has won Best Picture at so many other award ceremonies, especially Guild Award. But keep a close eye, you know, at Screen Actors Guild, Directors Guild, Producers Guild, because these are the people who make up the Motion Picture Academy. And keep in mind that by far the largest slice of the Motion Picture Academy are actors. The Screen Actors Guild is the largest guild in Hollywood. So take a look at how they lean and you will see Oppenheimer. You will also see in the Best Actor category that Cillian Murphy of Oppenheimer has been winning most of those awards. I think it's fair to say that he is an odds-on favorite. Best Actress, I think, might be one of the highlights of the evening. If you look at a number of the other award shows, you've seen Emma Stone win Best Actress for Poor Things until the Screen Actors Guild, when Lily Gladstone won the Best Actress Award for Killers of the Flower Moon. And that not only would be an historic win, but I think it would be, I think a lot of people would be very happy about this. It would not be a token prize by any means because her performance is extraordinary. So fingers and toes crossed that I think if there is maybe a little bit of drama, if you will, in the ceremony, let's look at the Best Actress category. That's not to say that Emma Stone is not worthy, but I think Lily Gladstone would be an emotional favorite. Best Supporting Actor. Who would have ever guessed that Robert Downey Jr.'s career has rebounded in such a big way after spending all of those years in the Marvel wilderness, if you will, as Iron Man? He has come back in a big way, and I think he's the odds-on favorite, and I think Hollywood really likes a comeback story. Gemma, think back. Robert Downey Jr.'s career, you know, it has been dramatic, right? I mean, he was,
to say the least,
he was a young star. A lot of people forget he was once a cast member of Saturday Night Live. He was an awful cast member, by the way, of SNL. He did some Brat Pack movies. He did Chaplin many years ago, was very good. And then he got into a whole bunch of trouble with the law, with addiction, et cetera. And I think it's also fair to say, and maybe he would even admit, that Marvel basically gave him a reset, right? And he
100%.
He elevated the Marvel universe. Iron Man is kind of the center of that universe, and that narrative arc was so interesting. And now here he is back giving some of these great performances, including in Oppenheimer. I think he's an odds-on favorite. And then for Best Supporting Actress, I'm very excited to see that Divine Joy Randolph from The Holdovers, which is one of my emotional favorites. I think that that will be another emotional high. So I think those are the big ones, the big categories. I'm most excited to see the songs. All of the original performers are going to be performing live. And so that will include Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling,
who is actually going to sing I'm Just Ken. He's up for Best Supporting Actor. I think he knows he's not going to win. So why not? Shoot for the fences, right? And I think it's going to be hilarious of him doing that. But you've got John Batiste performing. You've got the Osage Singers performing. And then you have Billie Eilish.
Mm-hmm.
And who will perform What Was I Made For? One of the most beautiful songs written for a film in recent memory. She will most certainly win for that song that she wrote and performed in Barbie. And keep in mind that she has already won an Oscar 2 years ago when she wrote and performed the song No Time to Die for the last Bond film. So at the age of 22, this weekend, she could become a two-time Oscar winner.
Wow.
But I think that that moment, that performance will be pretty emotional. And I think a lot of people who saw the movie and a lot of people who have bought that record are going to love that moment. There's a lot of reasons to actually watch this year.
It is a beautiful song, George.
It is.
I mean, it is really, really phenomenal.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the predictions.
Yep.
Let's talk about the past a little bit because I think it's, people always wonder about the host, right? Because there have been some hits and there have been some big misses.
Yes.
Over the years with Oscar hosts and some really unusual ones. So let's talk about this.
Yeah. I think some people may be surprised if I dropped some names and told you that they were actual hosts or co-hosts of the Oscars once. People like Paul Hogan once co-hosted. Remember Crocodile Dundee 1 year co-hosted with Jane Fonda and Alan Alda, of all people. Robin Williams was a lovely co-host once, but way off the leash. Bob Hope is maybe the most famous one. He hosted no less than 17 times. We love Billy Crystal. Johnny Carson was a classy host. So I thought we would give you a little taste of some of the hosts and what they had to say. And, there's so much that is unpredictable about the Oscars. There's one thing that I can absolutely guarantee. The show is incredibly long. If you don't joke about it, you will be a prisoner of your of 4 hours. So here is a taste of Paul Hogan, Robin Williams, Johnny Carson, and David Letterman.
G'day, viewers. This is my first time at the Academy Awards. I usually watch it on television. And for that reason, I've been asked to come out here and speak to my peers on behalf of the television audience. G'day, peers. This is, of course, the big event of show business. And the atmosphere here is pure electricity. But as a television show, it does tend to go slightly off the boil, particularly as we drift into the third and fourth hour.
So you guys, you know who won, right? You got all the envelopes right in there? What do you say we open those suckers up right now? Come on, they haven't read the rules yet. We can go away. Come on. We just read them all out right now and bang, we can go to the party. Oh, come on, not even for a couple of tickets to a Laker game. You get to sit next to Jack. He's out there right now. Okay, you're not going to do it? No? Okay, I admire that in a man, a little integrity. Okay, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I gave it my best shot, but I'm afraid we have to do the show.
As you well know by now, this is the 51st Annual Academy Awards. 2 hours of sparkling entertainment spread out over a four-hour show.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your wigs and keys. It's time to start passing out Academy Awards. That's right. When you hear your name, please come to the stage in an orderly single file and pick up your Oscar. We should all be home in about a half an hour.
If only. And that was David Letterman, who I think was brilliant as a host. And Jimmy Kimmel will be back. I think this is going to be his third or fourth time.
Yeah,
he'll do just fine. I think the fact that he does his show in Hollywood helps him a great deal because he'll know a lot of the people. And that he and Matt Damon are going to go at it. And Matt Damon is a nominee this year. So you know that that's going to be one of the running jokes. So I pulled out some of those clips from my treasure trove and thought you might enjoy that.
Okay. You've also pulled out some clips, though, of some of the more memorable speeches on Oscar night.
I have. And there's so many emotional moments I think about. Oh, my gosh. I remember when Charlie Chaplin came back. The first time he'd come back to America after being exiled, and the Academy said, please come back. We'd like to give you a special Oscar. That was pretty extraordinary. And honorary Oscars for Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart. And of all of the actors and their acceptance speeches, I chose two to revisit this morning. One of them from Russell Crowe, who won Best Actor for Gladiator, and one from Jodie Foster, and the first time she won an Oscar for a film called The Accused. And Russell Crowe talks about, you know, the fact that, the very thin line between success and failure is something that we can all relate to. And Jodie Foster, who remains one of the smartest people in any room she walks into, has a word or two about films that include, well, a little bit too much action, a little bit too much drama, and a little bit too much violence. So let's listen to Russell Crowe and Jodie Foster.
You know, when you grow up in the suburbs of Sydney or Auckland or Newcastle, like Ridley or Jamie Bell, or the suburbs of anywhere, you know, a dream like this seems kind of vaguely ludicrous and completely unattainable. But this moment is directly connected to those childhood imaginings. And for anybody who's on the downside of advantage and relying purely on courage, it's possible. Thanks very much.
This is such a big deal, and my life is so simple. There are very few things. There's love and work and family, and this movie is so special to us because it was all three of those things. And I'd like to thank all of my families, the tribes that I come from, my schools, thank my schools, and my family, all my brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers out there, and most importantly, my mother, Brandy, who taught me that all of my finger paintings were Picasso's, and that I didn't have to be afraid, and mostly that cruelty might be very human, and it might be very cultural, but it's not acceptable, which is what this movie's about. Thank you so much.
Those words have stuck with me for years.
Yeah.
Cruelty may be human and cultural, but it is not acceptable.
And that's very profound.
Yeah. So sometimes you'll get a moment like that.
But other times, George, you get some pretty off-the-rails hilarious moments, too.
You do, and good luck, Academy. When you invite certain people, you get what you've asked for. So so here's a couple of moments, one from the Divine Miss M, Bette Midler, who one year was asked to present Best Song. Well, look out, Academy. Steve Martin has a couple of words, and then the brilliant Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, who came back together, you know, the original Odd Couple, and they had a few words about directors. Let's listen.
Don't you hate it when presenters come out here and use this moment for their own personal aggrandizement? Of course you do. This is the Oscars. We have to be dignified as humanly possible. Endless Love from the Endless movie, Endless Love. How you like it so far, kids? For Your Eyes Only, from the film For Your Eyes Only, and they weren't kidding, I couldn't watch a single frame.
Art direction. What is it, who does it, why, and how much, and where are they, and here we are. Art direction, I don't know. Hi, I'm Steve Martin. They asked me to say that. I told them I didn't have to. They said, Steve, we're in China tonight. I said, they know me in China. Billions of them. Anyway, I can't walk down the street in China. Steve, how's it going? What? Hey, what are you doing here?
Now, there are all kinds of directors. There are spectator directors, dictator directors, directors that are kind and tolerant. They're understanding. There are also directors that are mean and petty and contemptible.
Some directors are short. And some are tall. Some are old and some are young. There are American directors, French, Czechoslovakian, and English directors, etc. There are directors who know everything about human behavior and nothing about the camera. There are directors who know camera angles, camera lenses, camera sprockets, and depth of focus, but who are totally ignorant of the human condition.
We have all of these directors with us tonight.
You know, it's brilliant writing, but it's also delivery. And,
yeah,
you know, when someone is asked to present, you know, yeah, you got to bring your A game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope, for instance, that Will Ferrell is a part of Sunday's show and that Kate McKinnon is there. And
oh, my goodness,
that everybody
right?
brings their A game, because I think we're pretty anxious to see a really good show. And you and I have talked about this. Television's last best hope is live broadcasts.
100%.
The Super Bowl did really well this year. The Grammy Awards really brought their A game this year. And if the Oscars step up, I think ABC will have a pretty good rating come Monday morning. But you know what? You got to bring your A game.
Yeah, you can't bore us over those 4 hours.
Oh, it's so long. But if
it's so long.
But it's a show. It is a show. And if you recognize that, people will be appreciative. And sometimes you'll get the emotional moment. Sometimes, I mean, you'll get a streaker. Everything has happened on the Oscars. And then sometimes you'll just be entertained and say, you know what, that wasn't too bad. Or, you know what, hey, maybe I'll check out that movie that I haven't seen yet.
Okay, George. Sun Valley Film Festival, which you go to. And then I see a pretty chummy picture on social media with you and Annette Bening.
Another Oscar nominee, and she'll be there Sunday night. She is up for Best Actress for NIAID. And yes, I was asked to host the Annette Bening moment. It seemed like it flashed by in a moment. It was overwhelming and humbling to walk into the Argyros Theater, and it was packed to the rafters, and some people just listened to the event out in the lobby. I mean, a lot of people were there, obviously, to see her, and I was the lucky guy who got to sit next to her, and I gushed a bit. I'm pretty transparent at these things. I am a fan. You do have to do your homework, though, and it turned out to be... Well, I think it's fair to say it turned out to be emotional. I think a few tears were shed. You know, Gemma, what's interesting is people will ask, hey, where can I see that? You can't. You can't. Mm. It's the rule is no cameras, no recordings. It's like live theater. And I always like to bring a couple of surprises that I don't tell other people about, except maybe the projectionist up in the booth. So I brought a couple of surprises, some images, some photos, and then a clip of Annette Bening and her husband, Warren Beatty, at the end. And so there were hugs, and it was lovely. But we talked about an amazing career. And Gemma, if you think back all the way back to Bugsy and American Beauty and The American President, NIAID, and then all of the other extras, she was originally cast to be the first Catwoman in the Batman movies Michael Keaton, but she became pregnant. And then all the way to her appearing in Captain Marvel, right? Just a couple of years ago. But she is one of the smartest people in the room. I think her acting comes second to her citizenship. And she talks quite a bit about what is important to her. And anyway, it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. And I was the luckiest guy in the world.
So, George, what stood out to you about Annette Bening? And I ask that because I have to say, one of my guilty pleasure movies is The American President. I love that movie and I love her character, but she is, I think, timeless in so many ways.
Absolutely. And what a career, right? It's so interesting mm-hmm. because last week I said, you know what, next Thursday, which is to say today, is our State of the Union. And she looked at me and there was a little twinkle in her eye. And I said, you know where I'm going, don't you? And she goes, The American President. I said, let's talk about The American President. And then she just went off. And of course, we remember that, you know, Aaron Sorkin wrote The American President. There is no West right. Wing without The American President. That inspired him to create The West Wing.
It did?
Absolutely.
I didn't realize that. Oh.
You know, Martin Sheen played, you know, the president's advisor in The American President. And that's where
that's
Aaron
right.
Sorkin got the idea to make him the president, right? But a lot of the same themes. But if you think of The American President and that cast with Michael J. Fox and, of course, the amazing yeah. Michael Douglas. So Annette Bening did not disappoint or bust any of my dreams. She said Michael Douglas was a gem to work with and a dear, and he continues to be a dear friend. But she said it was a big, big movie. But ultimately, it was a romantic comedy. And who would have ever yeah. figured out a romantic comedy with a progressive president in the Oval Office? But all these years later, a lot of us still quote that movie. And I've gone back to it a few times. I'm right there with you. It holds up in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So one other thing I want to know about Annette Bening, and yep. that is her marriage to Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
Now, and I only ask this and for perspective, maybe for people who don't, you know, might be younger. Warren Beatty, I think it's fair to say, I think nobody ever thought that he'd end up married. I mean, he dated Madonna. For goodness sakes.
Yeah. And I think he dated everyone in Hollywood.
Well, yeah, there's that. But then he fell hard for Annette Bening.
Yeah, on the set of Bugsy, no less. And, you know, it's so interesting. Some people may not even know this. She was originally set to audition for Dick Tracy, you know, years before Bugsy, but she said she never made it to that audition. Well, she's Annette Bening. And I got to tell you, and I'm a red-blooded American male, you know, my head was a little lightheaded and my heart did skip a beat being in her presence. But yeah, and it turns out that they desperately wanted to be in each other's company and more importantly, to raise a family. And that happened pretty darn quick. So at the end of our event, I said, how are you with looking at yourself on the big screen? And she looked at me and she's like, what? We didn't talk about this. We didn't plan this. And I said, how are you? And she goes, I guess I can watch a few clips. And I said, well, I want to play a little bit of one of my favorite holiday movies. And she said, I've never been in a holiday movie. And I said, no.
Yeah.
It's like one of my favorite holiday movies is Love Affair. And she said, oh my gosh, that's right. And I said, it takes place at Christmas. It ends on Christmas Eve. There's a scene where Ray Charles is singing Chestnuts Roasting on the Open Fire. And, but it's you. And she said, my husband. And so I had put together a clip and I asked the projectionist to roll it and put it up on the big screen. And we see them, you know, dancing on the ship and then going to the South Seas Island where they find his grandmother played by Katharine Hepburn in her final screen appearance with this beautiful score. And so there were a few tears. And then when the lights came up, she looks at me, she goes, if we don't hug right now, I'll never talk to you again. So, so that's all I needed to know about her marriage with Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I understand you have a favorite new TV drama. So tell us about this.
I do. It's called Alice and Jack. It is the definition of subtlety. Now it is it's an English miniseries. It's I think 6 episodes. I watched it in the UK. It will be coming to Masterpiece on public television beginning March 17th, and it co-stars Andrea Riseborough and Domhnall Gleeson. And Alice and Jack meet like so many other couples via a dating app, but the resemblance to any conventional relationship ends there as they break and heal and break again and mend and lose and love. It is a heartbreaking, heart-filling series. It is my absolute new favorite new series. I'm not sure how folks will do with heavy British accents. Sometimes you have to turn on the subtitles. But I love this. Again, it's a very soft, gentle series. That's why I loved it so much. But I thought I'd share a few seconds with you.
If I could be with anyone in the world, it would be with you.
So who are you, Jack?
Who am I?
You're great. You're kind and you're handsome and you're wonderful.
Be careful.
If I were careful with anything in this world, I would be careful with you.
You weren't, though. You disappeared, Alice. How did we get here?
Met somebody and I moved on.
If you have somebody on their knees in front of you, you don't leave them waiting there. You help them up.
Life just stuns you, Jack. Even when you think you know everything. Can I tell you a secret? Whatever happens, I think we're going to see each other again.
It's something that a lot of people will find, probably see the first episode, and start telling everyone else. Mm. Alice and Jack, and it's probably not on anyone's radar yet. I promise you, you do not want to miss this. It starts March 17th on Masterpiece on Idaho Public Television and across the nation on PBS. It was an unexpected big hit in the UK. No one saw this one coming. But the performances are stunning. And it is a beautiful portrayal of an all-encompassing love of soulmates. And that includes a fair amount of heartbreak. And that what makes it so real. Alice and Jack, you will thank me later for after you see this first episode.
Okay. And before we wrap up, George, you say there's a pretty funny new docuseries that we should check out.
I'm so excited about this. It's coming to Apple TV later this month. It is called Steve, and it is about the one and only Steve Martin.
No.
And if you bought my album and you came down here expecting me to do a lot of routines from the record and I didn't do them, well, excuse me!
This guy was getting people so happy.
I always thought, this just does not happen. And it did.
He's the most idolized comedian ever.
He reinvented stand-up.
It was a cultural phenomenon.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Steve Martin.
Steve Martin.
I am a wild and crazy.
What he was doing was unique. It was chancy.
I always thought of him as the door out of the 60s. You could be silly again.
Steve. All comedy was political. And I felt that it was time to change that.
Steve Martin has just taken the big leap onto the screen.
I was launched into the stratosphere.
Was he ever? And of course, that
no
included
kidding.
Film. But here's what's exciting. This docuseries, and by the way, it's only two parts, is directed by Oscar winner Morgan Neville, the man who directed Won't You Be My Neighbor, that great documentary about Mr. Rogers, and also 20 Feet from Stardom about the background singers. So you know the quality is so good. I'll tell you a little story. I don't know if I've ever told you this before, Gemma, but in 1987, I was working in television in Buffalo, New York for Capital Cities, which had just bought ABC. And on a Sunday afternoon, I was at the local art gallery, the Albright Knox Art Gallery. And it was Sunday at noon. I think they had just opened. And I don't think there were three people in there. And Steve Martin was walking around the gallery. He was in town. That's where he and John Candy were filming Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
But he was
in town scouting for art. And now we know Steve Martin to have one of the most formidable art collections on the planet. He is an intellectual by all means, but yet he has this silly center. And all the way to today with Only Murders in the Building with the wonderful Martin Short. I can't wait to see this. So this is called Steve, with a big exclamation point on it, a documentary in two places, which means, just two parts. And it will start later this month on Apple Plus.
Well, as always, George, it is such a pleasure to chat with you. I really appreciate our time.
Thank you so much, Gemma, for giving me a second home.
We've been speaking with our resident movie critic, George Prentice, who also spends his spare time hosting Morning Edition, about what to watch this weekend. And remember, the Oscars are on Sunday. I want to thank all of you for joining us. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.